Welcome to the first ever TCDSU Diversity in STEM podcast. Diversity in STEM is a TCDSU campaign aiming to highlight and support the range of backgrounds and identities within STEM. For those of you who have supported the campaign in previous years, welcome back. And to the people new to the campaign, welcome along to this new adventure. This podcast aims to be a discussion with individuals from underrepresented groups about their experiences in STEM, the work that they do, and their views on how to make STEM more diverse and more accessible. Current COVID-19 regulations have provided a barrier to the talks, Q&As, and panel discussions, which have been characteristic of this campaign in previous years. In our efforts to offer students similar experiences, the Diversity in STEM Committee decided to launch this podcast to continue to provide this forum for discussion and representation, and to ensure that these voices can still be heard in the absence of in-person events. My name is Bev, and I'm this year's Diversity in STEM chairperson. On this introductory episode, myself and my fellow committee member Aoife spoke with women scientists from within Trinity, some who have been with us for many years and others who have joined Trinity recently in the midst of the pandemic. We spoke about what it is like to be a woman in STEM and how this role can be used to empower others.
Hi, yeah, my name is Aoife McLeisett. I'm a professor in genetics in Trinity College Dublin, and I'm also head of genetics.
And Aoife, what encouraged you to get into STEM? Was there a specific moment or person that inspired you?
I think it was a kind of a gradual dawning in my case, in that in school, I liked school, right? I was one of those people, I liked school, and always enjoyed learning. And I distinctly remember at one point, one of my best friends saying to me, just kind of in a slightly odd voice, kind of going, "You're good at science," or something. I was like, "Am I?" You know. And then I suppose part of it was maybe I liked the idea of being good at something. You know, at that age, I think you enjoy being good at things. It kind of almost worked out by accident, I think, because then I decided I had other things I liked to do as well. Like, you know, when I was thinking about going to university, I also liked history and politics. I still like politics. You know, it's a sport. You know, arguing politics over the dinner table is still something I enjoy. But science was my first choice. And, I came to Trinity to do science. And I thought, like beforehand, I thought I might like genetics. And then once I learned more about genetics, I was totally hooked. And so that's the way it went. But I didn't imagine myself doing a PhD or anything.
You mentioned there that when you were applying to university, you were considering politics or history. And do you think that being a woman in STEM, that there's any unique disadvantage to that, I suppose, in comparison to maybe pursuing an arts-based career or something similar?
I'll say, first of all, I had no concept of that when I was thinking about what I wanted to do for university, happily. I didn't have any... I had never encountered the idea that anything to do with my gender might get in the way. And I think that's good. And so I always, you know, I kind of think about this sometimes when we're, you know, trying to do things like this, you know, to support women in science. I kind of don't want little girls to get the idea that there are obstacles there for them, because I think it's kind of discouraging. So I have these mixed feelings, because I think it's really important to recognize the obstacles that are there and that are real, and the prejudices, because it's an important way of addressing them. But then I also kind of feel I don't want to discourage anyone, because I think I was blissfully unaware. And I think that ignorance actually helped me in a certain respect, because if anybody did anything, I'd be going, "Sorry, what?" And they, you know, and they'd be like, "Oh shit, I better not." You know, I think it makes people back off when you're like, "Sorry, did you just say something mean to me? Because I didn't expect anything mean." But it's never actually quite so overt as mean. So I started off with no concept of that. And I was very lucky, because I didn't encounter it in my formative years. So in Trinity, had a really, really wonderful supportive environment. I always felt really encouraged. So the whole genetics department is, and it still is, was then and still is, a place where the students are really treated like colleagues, which... is special. And then I had a PhD supervisor who was also like that, you know, so I never encountered it. The first time I consciously encountered this was actually when I was in the US doing my postdoc. And so at this point, I've already done my degree and my PhD, and I was over there working. And it was this man who was a professor. He wasn't my boss. He was a professor in a different department. And we kind of at this point had started a bit of a collaboration with him. And he then sent me this email one time with basically a list of menial tasks. You know, they were science-related menial tasks. Like, it wasn't like get my coffee, but it was like, it was not to do with my project, but he kind of wanted some data collected and some files and whatever. And I'm like, and I remember, and I kind of feel like, because I'd had all of these good experiences up until then, I was ready to go, actually, no. And I did really promptly say, actually, no. And so I just wrote back to him going, you're not my boss. You can't give me this list of things. You know, I'm not here to just kind of be your assistant or whatever you think. And I sent off this really strong email in a fit of confidence. And then when I came back, I didn't have a mobile phone. The US, it was like US was a bit slower to have mobile phones common than Europe. So I'd had a mobile phone when I was a PhD student, but then I didn't have one when I was a postdoc. So I just came back to some missed calls on the desk phone. And I finally talked to him, and he was like hyper apologetic and everything. And so it was good as well. So it was like good in two counts. So first of all, he did it, but I reacted promptly. And then he, I think, reacted promptly as well. And I kind of felt like actually I was well prepared for that in a certain way, because I had such a supportive environment before. So I'm sitting here as somebody who's still in the system, and it's almost by definition, I didn't have those awful experiences. So yeah, I think there's all of these things combined. The good part is that people are conscious of it now and they're working on it. The universities are taking it seriously. They realize they're actually letting down. So it's two aspects. One is letting down people who have, you know, who ought to have the same rights as everybody else to have a career they find fulfilling and all of that. And the other is actually losing something from the university as well, even if the university was being self-interested. They're missing out on what all of these talented women, or some of these talented women, can bring, because we're not losing all women. You know, it's not that there's no examples.
Exactly.
There's some are missing out who would be very capable.
What sort of positive feedback in your work usually gets you motivated? And has that been impacted maybe by COVID and not being able to access facilities?
Yeah, it has been definitely a strange year. The general idea, though, of, you know, what motivates me and, you know, how do I, that kind of, that general point. When it comes to, so the different aspects of the work, when it comes to research work, I still get a thrill out of figuring things out, which is fun. And I really enjoy, so in science, you work in teams. So I have a small team of PhD students and postdocs, and you know, those interactions are fun as well, because, you know, we're talking about things, maybe we'll discuss something, they'll go off and try something and they come back and we go, it worked, you know, that's fun. And we think about, you know, and I suppose writing a paper is still a nice little milestone and these kind of things. So that part. And then from the teaching side of things, I think we are very lucky in Trinity that we get really brilliant students, and I really enjoy the interactions with our students. And it's a very satisfying experience to teach people who really want and who kind of get excited about the ideas. And that I find is very motivating and stimulating for me then as well.
You mentioned earlier that when you started university, you know, you never expected that you would go on to pursue a PhD. Recently, as part of the Diversity in STEM campaign, we surveyed students of the STEM faculty and we asked them, you know, had they experienced or witnessed gender-based discrimination within the faculty, and if they had that impacted their desire to maybe pursue postgraduate study or research? And a lot of them who had experienced or witnessed gender-based discrimination said that no, it hadn't impacted their desire to pursue postgraduate research. But when they were asked to elaborate on that, it kind of came across as if that they were going to pursue maybe a research degree or a master's out of spite or as an act of resilience against the gender-based discrimination that they face.
Yeah, it's very sad if people have those experiences and they feel like that, especially at such an early stage in their careers. So I think I you know, it's a bit like a a toxic boyfriend or girlfriend. It's like, dump them, get rid of them. Only surround yourself by people who make you feel good and who support you in your the things you want to do. So if somebody's in a subject they love, but the department isn't good to them, for example, yeah, they should probably say, I'm going to do a PhD, but not here. I think, feeling that need to prove yourself, and it's not terrible, right? You know, kind of wanting to, the kind of I'll show them is not a terrible thing, but it's also, I think, worth thinking about the intrinsic value of doing a PhD as the thing it is, that of what it gives you in terms of fulfillment and satisfaction and the enjoyment of, you know, taking on a question or a problem, investigating it really thoroughly, becoming the expert on that thing, because that's what happens when you do a PhD. You know, it's always, I think, when you say this to students who are still in their undergrad, it's like, no, you're going to know more about it than your supervisor by the end, because you're going to be the one who's really doing it. And that's not a surprise. That's what happens. And that's what you expect to happen. You're going to be such an expert on this. And that's very satisfying as well. It's very intellectually satisfying and emotionally, you know, satisfying as well. And so I think, if people do feel like that kind of, I'm going to show them thing, that's okay to a degree, but I think you should also be doing it because of what it gives you and the personal satisfaction. And I also think sometimes, you know, it's, to quote Taylor Swift, haters gonna hate. And if you spend your life trying to make the haters not hate you, that'll be a bit futile. And there are really good reasons for you to do a PhD and to stay in academia, because if you love it, that's the thing to do. But it's, you know, it's also not the only thing to do. It's worth saying that, you know, there are plenty of valuable and satisfying and rewarding things you can do outside academia too. But it should be because it's what you want to do, not because you've been pushed out and you shouldn't stay in out of spite only. I can see that if you had a bad experience, you might feel a bit of spite. But I think you should do something like this. It's a huge undertaking. You know, it's a PhD is a labor of love, I think, as well. And you should be doing it because you enjoy it and because it gives you something.
I suppose as a kind of closing comment, the main focus, I suppose, of this podcast and future episodes is, I suppose, to empower women and members of other underrepresented groups who might not feel as if they belong or that there's a place for them in STEM. And I'm just wondering, as a closing comment, is there anything that you would like to say to perhaps encourage or empower those people?
Yeah, well, I wonder if I can say something that's sufficiently profound, but I would really like to see science and academia in general being really inclusive, and that means not just having people present, but that they feel valued and listened to and all of those things. And in my various positions, I've been trying to make efforts in that direction. You know, so I'm head of my department here in Trinity. I've also been president of the main academic society in my field. And in both of these contexts, we've been doing things to, you know, trying to facilitate women and other minorities, trying to encourage greater participation. And while we try to do things, I think I'm also aware that I only have my set of experiences and I don't necessarily know what other people's experiences are. And I'm not the only one. Many people like me would really like to listen. And if there's things we can do to help, really like to hear from people and telling us what would be helpful. You know, one thing would be to keep it up, to find allies and help those allies to help you as well.
I spoke to Dr. Carla Harper, a lecturer in the botany department, about her experiences as a woman in STEM and her career journey as a paleomycologist.
First off, I thank you so much for having me on. I am a new assistant professor of environmental science in the botany department at Trinity. My research focus is, I'm a paleobotanist, so I study fossil plants, but I have a specialty in paleomycology, so looking at fossil fungi And I'm really interested in the interactions between ancient fungi and ancient plants and how they interacted with plants to either, you know, help them or maybe hinder them. And looking at that like throughout deep time. So really looking at very old plants. And so that's like about the Devonian. So it's about 400 million years ago.
Wow.
And, you know, fun fact, Ireland has a lot of localities from that time period. So it's a really interesting, you know, place and time period to be. Like I said, I'm brand new to Trinity. I started back in March. I was actually on campus for about 1 week before COVID started. So it's been, you know, a different start.
And what encouraged you to get into STEM, especially mycology or paleobotany? It's a very unusual topic.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I have not met anybody who said, you know, like when I grow up, I want to be a paleomycologist. So it's definitely kind of a niche field. You know, I like to tell people that I kind of fell into it. You know, when I was, you know, little, I really loved like sci-fi films, especially like Jurassic Park or Alien. And, you know, I was always just kind of questioning things. And I was always like building things like the Legos and stuff like that.
Yeah. And that's really interesting. Yeah, it's definitely getting inspiration from the films and stuff. You wouldn't really think of it, but when you're younger, for sure, anything can have an influence on what you want to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this is a diversity in STEM podcast, of course. Was there a woman in STEM who inspired you, or does, now that you are a woman in STEM, do you feel that you need to inspire people or anything like that?
Oh, sure. I think, you know, and when I was younger, I was kind of like unaware of it, but in Jurassic Park, like, there's a strong like female lead. Ellie Sadler, who is a paleobotanist, and I didn't really put that together until like much later on, like actually right before grad school. Yeah. You know, the same thing with like Alien. So like Sigourney Weaver is like the lead in that. And so she's a very kind of, you know, strong female character. So I would say maybe those kind of subliminally like affected me. But yeah, there is definitely somebody who I really look up to, and she was on my committee during grad school. Her name's Evie Taylor. She's a paleobotanist. She is a retired curator and professor emerita at the University of Kansas, and she is just an all-around kind of badass lady. She is, you know, brilliant. She's a fantastic writer. She's been to Antarctica several times all over the world. Wow. Like, she's a really prominent person in our field. So I'd say a lot of that is, you know, kind of looking up to her and just, you know, just seeing what she does is just being really, really encouraging. I think as a, you know, as a woman in science now, I guess, I think it's just kind of important to just show that like there are very, you know, there are a lot of women in science. Being in it, talking about it, and just being a good role model, like overall, I think is important.
Yeah. When you joined Trinity, you only had the week on campus, and then obviously the whole world just went up in flames very suddenly. For a lot of people, they found that to be very demotivating, I guess, having to be at home more often or not being able to see their colleagues. And as I guess you'd only just started, so I guess I presume it had a different impact than if you'd been in the job for longer and got to meet people more. So how did you stay motivated, or how do you currently stay motivated through the whole pandemic?
I think it's a great question. You know, I think it's difficult overall. And I think that it's important to also kind of let that be known. I mean, for me, like one of the most important things that I kind of found throughout COVID and like the quarantine and everything was just like really prioritizing your own mental health. I think that is like one of the best gifts you can kind of like give to yourself, of just saying like, you know what, today I'm not really doing okay. And that's okay. I think it really helped me to just kind of stay connected, and just having like reoccurring like Zoom meetings with particular people, just so I could have something to kind of, you know, look forward to, somebody to talk to. I have a reoccurring staff meeting, and like, you know, I get to talk to everybody and see everybody. And so I think just kind of keeping that routine really helps.
So often I feel in, I think in academia, especially in science-based academia, there is this need to just work and not take that break back. But at the moment, you know, you couldn't possibly be doing that. You're living in your office. So it's very important to take those breaks.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just kind of just, and I'm saying this because I'm still kind of a work in progress with this, of just like finding that like work-life balance. Like, you know, if I'm sitting at my dining table, that's when I'm working. If I'm sitting like on the couch, it's kind of just, you know, home life and stuff like that. And so I don't think it's, you know, I don't know. I can't imagine it's easy for like anybody, especially if you're just isolated and you don't really, you know, know anybody or anything. And I think just kind of keeping contact, no matter if it's like through text or just Zoom meetings or emails, anything, just like help in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And do you have, as a professor, and you're teaching a lot of undergrads at the moment, and do you have anything that you'd like to say to like women in science in the undergrad?
Oh, sure. Yeah. You know, it's the same advice I think I give like any, you know, student I cross paths with. I always tell them like, you should find out what you don't want to do. You should try, like try different things. And if you don't, you know, if you don't like it or you don't enjoy it, then that's okay. You know, you don't feel like a failure, you know, and don't ever feel stuck. Like just, you can always kind of just switch it up. And, you know, there's a whole list of things that I figured out along the way. If I had to get across like anything, it's just, yeah, try a lot of things and figure out while you can, like what you don't want to do. And I think as an undergraduate and a graduate student, it's a great opportunity to kind of figure that out, because, you know, you're not really in your permanent position or anything, right? So you can just kind of try a bunch of different things. And even if you are, even if you're later on and you're like, you know what, I don't really like this, like that's okay. Just do something else. You didn't fail it, you tried it, and you can always just say, you can be proud of yourself for at least trying.
I think it's often that we don't see how much you can blend different subjects together in science. Sometimes it's very straight, keep the straight and narrow, but you can bring anything in really. It's sure, we're doing a podcast now. Who would have thought that?
Right. Yeah. And I think it's just like, you know, and science is, I think it's one of the most exciting things about it. You can kind of make it like what you want it to be. And it's an amazing job, right? You can, if you have a question, you can actually go out and investigate it and figure it out. Yeah. So for example, like, I'm not really the best statistician, but I know lots of people who are, and I'll go ask them like, hey, do you want to collaborate on a project if I do this and you do the stats? And it's this really nice kind of blending of, you know, talents. And so I think, you know, especially when I'm talking to like undergraduates and they're doing really well on all their subjects, but there's one thing that they're not very good at, they really beat themselves up about it. Just remind them like, hey, it's okay. You don't have to be great at everything, because by the time you really get, you know, kind of up in your career field, you get to find people who are great at that and you can work together. And so a lot of science is collaboration too.
So that wraps up the first episode of the Diversity in STEM podcast, where we have had some important discussions about female representation in both the life and natural sciences, as well as in STEM in general. Thanks so much to our guests, Professor Ethan McLeisett and Dr. Carla Harper. You were both fantastic and it was such a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for listening. There will be another episode 2 weeks from now. In the meantime, if you are looking for more Diversity in STEM content, you can check us out on Instagram at @TCDSU_DiversityInSTEM or on Facebook at @TCDSU_DiversityInSTEM. And as always, if you are looking to get involved in anything, please do get in touch.